Why are people in positions of power allowing these apps to exist? Why are we not doing more to protect?
What is it going to help us do that we couldn't do otherwise? How does it make me more efficient? Like, how does it make me, how does it speed up the research that I need to do?
I am not passionate about AI. I am passionate about fostering a world where my students can thrive. I'm passionate about education. I'm passionate about creating sort of like a more just, equitable education system.
All right. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of the AMP211 podcast. We have double the pleasure and double the learning to happen today because we have two incredible guests. We have Tia Morris, the Executive Director of Teach for America New York, as well as Eldridge Gilbert, the Senior Vice President of SEO Scholars and the co-founder of Legit Leader. We also are obviously joined by my incredible co-host, Rebecca Boltzma. How are you doing today, Rebecca?
Living the dream, but winter is creeping in here in Canada, so... You know, I'm missing summer already, but happy to be here and happy to be inside where it's warm and with some amazing guests.
Same here. I had to rock my Amped to 11 skull cap today for the first time in New York with this cold weather, but I am honored to actually be recording this from TFA New York headquarters, where Tia Morris is the executive director. So Tia and Elle, welcome today. How are you both doing?
I'm doing well. Like you, Rebecca, I am... dreading winter is coming. I feel like I'm in an episode of Game of Thrones. And so I know it is coming, but I still try to kind of creep and still hold on to the little 60 degree days that we're getting, but doing okay otherwise.
I'm also doing well and feeling the exact same. Like, oh, it's fall is creeping away from me. And I love a fall, you know, scarf situation, but it feels like it's going by too fast, but otherwise doing well.
Well, we're so honored to have both of you on today. This is such an incredible honor. This is the first time, I believe, we've had two guests on a single episode of the AMP211 podcast. So just breaking trends all over the place here. And Tia and Elle, I want to definitely start with your stories, right? So both of you just bring such incredible energy and urgency to education and innovation. Tia, I remember one of the first times we met was actually... learning about a really innovative tool, PlayLab, and watching your eyes light up, and you were just like, let's get into some good trouble here. So I'd love if you could share with everyone your why, how you arrived at this moment at the intersection of education and innovation, and, you know, where you see it going today. Tia, you want to start us off?
Absolutely. So I am a servant leader. I consider myself a warrior for social justice. I am a Jersey girl, born and raised, and went to school in New Jersey, Seton Hall. And when I got there, I realized very early on that not all of my friends were prepared for college. And that led me on a journey. Even though I was a business major and I was going to work in international business, live in Europe somewhere, travel the world, I said, you know what? I'm going to do that. But first, I want to start schools that get Black and brown kids to college. So I'm just going to start a school, and then I'm going to go back to work in business and use this business degree. And almost 30 years later, I'm still working in education. That journey brought me to Teach for America, where I was a Teach for America core member in Harlem in 1998. Started teaching there, helped found a school. After that, a network of schools, worked in a couple of districts. And the biggest thing I realized was that I felt kind of like a doctor in a plague. I felt like I was just putting Band-Aids on solutions, and I really wanted to be at an altitude where I can help to change systems. And so that led me back to being the executive director of Teach for America. And, you know, where I am today, you know, we've heard the talk that education is the sort of civil rights movement of our era. I think that's true, but I'm really thinking about this sort of technology wave and who gets left behind. And so even though I'm a little bit old Gen Xer and a little bit afraid of AI, I realized a few years ago that I really needed to get over my own fears and do what's best for my students to ensure that the communities in which I work, communities that are often left behind when there is technology, that they have access and opportunity as well. And so that's how we got here.
Like Tia, I'm a TFA alum. I was a little after in 2005. I think important to my story is that I started out as a core member in New Orleans, and Hurricane Katrina moved me to Houston, along with teaching students who were evacuees. And my first year was spent doing that in Houston. It was really monumental for me to have to engage with a population that was so familiar to me. Black and brown kids, but also really different for me culturally and dealing with so much stress and trauma. But I think I really endeared myself to the work of education and being, and it, the fact that it goes beyond the classroom. It involves all the well-being and all the other pieces of a student's life that are really important for them to thrive. And so I did that for a couple of years. I was a school principal in Houston, and then I moved to the Bay Area and did school leader management with KIPP and got a chance to live what it was like to support principals in different challenging environments, and then moved to Brooklyn to do similar work, and have moved over into a nonprofit space after working in Coney Island for 5 years as a chief schools officer. So for me, all of those different places, all the different students and principals and lives that I touched left me with a deep sense of obligation to make sure that I was giving back, you know, an obligation to make sure that I'm helping those who have problems accessing the things that they are rightfully due. And I think access to AI is a part of that narrative now, right? Access to the technology that's going to be so life-changing for people. For me, part of my work is about opening those doors and creating opportunities for students and staff, and mostly their leadership, their principals, to access the tools that are going to help make their jobs more sustainable, help build leader better capacity amongst them, so that we can do this work of closing the achievement gap and the opportunity gap in a really meaningful way as the world continues to change. So that's what's bringing me here today and brought me to the journey of co-founding a Legit Leader.
I love both of those stories. We're so grateful you're sharing all that you've gathered along the way with us and with our listeners. One of the things that we really like to do here on the show, Brett actually started it this season, but this idea of like talking good behind people's backs, how kind of compliments mean more if you find out somebody was saying something nice about you behind your back. And so we just wanted to start on a note of an aura of positivity and just invite you, is there anybody that you'd like to give a shout out to that's doing excellent work that you would love for them to know about it or know that you were saying nice things behind their back? Now's your chance.
So one person who I'd love to give a shout out to is Yamile Toussaint. She is a Teach for America alum. She founded an organization called STEM from Dance. And I love that she is trying to change the game when it comes to girls seeing themselves as scientists, seeing themselves as good at math, understanding that they can marry their love of something, dance, with coding, with the sciences, with math. And so she's doing this now, started as a passion project for seeing, like when she was in the classroom, that the young girls who didn't feel confident in math, didn't feel confident in science, she started as a passion project. And now it's something that started in New York City, and it's you know, it's growing across the country. So I want to give her a shout out. She was a finalist for CNN Hero this past year. So she really is doing amazing work and one of the most genuine, beautiful people that you would ever meet.
That's a great one. Yeah, I can't wait to look her up. Al, got anybody on mind?
The first is like one of my mentors, Carlos Moreno. He is the he leads Big Picture Learning Schools. And he's like my fraternity brother. I met him when I was 18 years old. I've known him for a really long time. And he is just a phenomenal leader. He like wrote a book recently and I've gone to his book talks and just seen them like generations of students that he's touched in the ways that he has cultivated like new leadership and really piloted like new opportunities for students and internships through all the different ways that Big Picture Learning does school. And man, I love him so much, and I really look up to him. So I would say Carlos is one. And then I gotta be honest, like the second is Judy Tang Wen. She's the CEO of and another co-founder for Legit Leader. And she is just phenomenal. Like she's doing work at Bellwether. She's charting this path that leading us along this path in AI. And it was like her brainchild to think about how we can revolutionize school leadership. And I really admire the courage and the force, like the vision that she has, and like the impact that we could be making. So shout out to Judy, my other co-founder is probably Matt, but I'm gonna give it to Judy and Carlos today.
Those are good ones. I think you might get another chance later. So if you've got some more in the back of your mind, just hang on to those. I think Brett is going to give you another opportunity in a little bit. So you may not be aware, but part of like my background and the space that I work in primarily has to do with AI ethics and specifically K-12 ethical scenarios and risks and kind of some of the less cool part of AI. But I wanted to start our conversation today by chatting with you guys a little bit about that and what you're seeing that are causing you to think more about ethical risks connected to generative AI in education. What would you like to flag? And are you seeing any solutions on the horizon?
You know, the thing that I'll say that at the top of mind is not necessarily the use of AI in schools, but the ethics for me is around like the kind of conversations that AI is being, you know, empowered to have with students that become, that cross certain boundaries, whether it be, you know, romantic, sexual, whatever. And just having been a middle school and a high school principal, I know how some students who are lonely or like, you know, want to be in relationships and know how that can grow and morph and change. And I really worry about students whose use of AI isn't monitored in a way such that they begin having conversations that really can be dangerous for them, like on a personal level, but then can transcend into like how they engage in groups of people and their expectations of others. And not having like that human conversation that allows you to like regulate and to second guess and to have some ethical, some moral stuff kind of drawn into question the way that that another person does. And so that is something that's on my mind. There was an article about it recently as well as it pertains to adults. I don't have a solution because I also know that this is a, you know, it's a new space and everyone's exploring and we want kids to explore too, but it is something that is on my mind. And gives me a little bit of concern, particularly with the age of students that are beginning to engage with AI without kind of without monitoring and on their own.
I appreciate you sharing that, Elle, because I am thinking a lot about the risks as it relates to our young people. You look at that case recently with the young person where AI sort of is convincing it to commit suicide, that sort of thing. And so the way I think about AI is that it's like just the next phase of innovation on the information superhighway. And like, I think with any other highways, you have, if you just have speed without any guardrails, without any rules, like it can lead to disaster. And so I think that we need acceleration in AI and in tech, but we also need some sort of safeguards that can protect our kids, safeguards that can just like that centers humanity. And so whether that's like looking at bias and the sort of bias that can be in AI, ensuring that there are equity checks somehow. I'm also thinking a lot about privacy. And so not only the sort of data, but also just the privacy concerns in general and what needs to happen to ensure that we are protecting the privacy of our students, but just our data in general. And in an increased surveillance state, like how are we protecting that? And so I think that there are wonderful advances, but I do think, especially as educators, we have a responsibility to ensure that we're keeping our kids and families as safe as possible.
You bring up some really good points. And I know California has recently passed a bunch of new laws designed to protect kids when it comes to AI, things like age verification, or they're required to flag every time a kid talks about something they shouldn't, document that, report it to the government so the government can gather some insights on this. It's better than nothing, I guess, but you're right, there are a lot of concerns connected to relationality with children and how only relating to AI chatbots, relying on that as their primary source of advice or support versus in the 50s, if you needed support, you eventually had to find a human. What will that mean? So you bring up some really real risks that need to be addressed, especially for children. You bring up also, Tia, some really interesting points around the bias we're seeing embedded into these generative AI models. Are you doing anything, or those conversations that you're having, or are there any ways that you're helping kids recognize that? Do you think it's something that we need to be addressing sort of at a teacher level, at a broader scale? Just curious what your experience and conversations around that have been.
Some of the pushback that I've gotten from teachers about AI deals with this. And so in an attempt to really begin to integrate this into our work and how it is we're training new teachers entering the field, we had a number of sessions now where we integrate into their new teacher training. And we were really surprised. I thought that you know, a generation much younger than I would be embracing this. And we got a lot of pushback this summer in our new teacher trainings. And some of it was around some of the ethics around the impact on community, but others of it, you know, was around protecting kids and bias and those sorts of things. One of the things that we're looking to do is to, one, just helping teachers to be aware of it. Two, to help teachers understand that you can actually have some agency in what you're doing in your classroom. And if you're more proactive with how you're helping students use it, then you can actually help mitigate this as opposed to pretending like it doesn't exist, pretending like kids aren't accessing it, and then letting them just be impacted by it. So while I'm not, you know, writing the laws right now, I'm not creating the programming, one, teachers can create their own programs. So we actually did actually have them work with some use PlayLab to create some of their own programs to understand how they can actually be creators. If you think it's unethical, let's create something that can actually meet the needs that you have. And then two, really helping them to take more ownership in what it looks like in a classroom. Because while bias is a risk, I also think there's a risk of student skill atrophy. Like if we're using AI and it's taking the place of certain fundamental skills that they need to develop, I think that's also a big risk too. So the more that educators can actually embrace it, the more we can mitigate these challenges and actually have it be an accelerator for our students, as opposed to something that's going to ultimately hurt them or harm them.
I think the equity and bias pieces, some of what we found when we were starting to build our tools and really being intentional about the guardrails and what we're asking our tools to reference to, like, make sure that we're balancing out the ways in which the internet sees the world and, like, all of the information that AI is getting alongside how we want, you know, how we want it filtered. So it responds and directs its gaze towards a certain, a more broad experience of the world and, like, a different set of reference points for who and what experiences really matter. And so I do think it's important, like you said, not only for us to be thinking about that experience for kids, but also as adults to be taking our own learning and experiencing both how we navigate AI so that we create tools that are thinking about race, gender, all the other like isms and getting information in ways that helps us make more human decisions and ones that respect the dignity of everyone. And then also using tools that have that kind of mindset, that framework built in ahead of time, so that when you're, you know, you don't need to do all the work yourself, but you can be thoughtful and selective and be discerning about what you use and making sure that, you know, we're sending a message to future creators that, like, we want you to be, you know, thinking about the bias that is there and building a certain level of awareness into the tools. And I mean, and I can say that from experience because we've done something similar. And so I would encourage everyone to hold the industry to a high standard as it relates to like tools that are out there and what they can do to make sure that we're not perpetuating bias, especially harmful bias on some of our most vulnerable communities, students included.
I often talk to people about some of these issues and they feel big and overwhelming. So we have to kind of compartmentalize into things that are kind of big and out of our control, like how these models were trained, as you mentioned, on an internet that kind of sucks. And then things that we can influence within our sphere, right? Like you said, bringing awareness. And then things that we can on an individual level actually control, which is, you know, choosing our resources. I love the word you used, discerning. Pat Young Pradit, who is with Code.org, I listened to him speak at a keynote last week, and he really focused on, for teachers, teaching about AI and teaching with AI and making sure here's what's wrong with it, but here's how you use it and you use it well. So I think both of what you brought up aligns so nicely with that. Brett, we're leaving you out. Anything you want to chime in on
no.
here?
I mean, two things you all said that, you know, just... I missed the part we're talking good about people's back, but two people that came out of TFA, the Reinvention Lab. One is Michelle Culver. She does the Rhythm Project. She founded that. So I've been so fortunate. I've been using that in my keynotes. So last week I had a few hundred educators in one district playing that game. And what's great is the idea of it is this scenario, would it help strengthen human connection, erode human connection, or you need more context? And just having all these different educators just immediately have very strong opinions, and then afterwards asking them, well, what's actually guiding whether it's strengthening or eroding it? It really just comes down to your own biases and values. no judgment on that, but that's ultimately where we are in the world of AI. So that's just been so interesting how we all have these really strong opinions. And sometimes it authentically can help strengthen your connection with students in the classroom or parents, or make you more equipped for human connection. And other times it can obviously be the thing that erodes it. And also, you all mentioned, again, another amazing tool that came out of Reinvention Lab PlayLab with Youssef. One of the first tools I made was a tool called I Wish That You Could See Me How I See Me using PlayLab. And it could work for any grade level or teachers. Often it's like a great entry point to be like, how do you want people to see you? How can you then create a prompt that can be put into an image generator? And it teaches adults how important specificity is to prompt engineering. And then how quickly you could turnkey that to any age level. I have a kindergarten daughter who I've done that with to make pictures of herself. You know, what adjectives do you use to describe yourself? How do you share those things? How do you compare and contrast, different adjectives and different wording? So like, there's so many ways you can teach kids about bias by just asking them to talk about themselves. But teachers especially, I find, love it because they want the pictures to look and reflect them. They got to overcome a lot of biases built into those systems/society. So just wanted to highlight two amazing people doing great work that are trying to mitigate the things we're talking about here. I think something that seems to be a common theme for everyone on this podcast and the work and the people we lead with is really making sure that humanity and relationships stay at the center of education. As you all are working together with people around, you know, how to guide and how to instruct and lead educators, especially on AI guidance, where do you see as the best ways we can use AI to reduce some of those inequities, Tia, that you highlighted, right? We want to make sure this is a bridge, not a barrier to opportunity. What are some ways you're seeing that this could potentially help those systemic barriers that, you know, we've all seen and experienced in our work in education?
I think the biggest, the thing that's most promising to me regarding how I see education moving is the use of AI and tech in general to bridge some of the longstanding opportunity and achievement gaps that we see in certain communities. I have worked in education for nearly 30 years, but we've seen for decades upon decades upon decades differences in achievement in affluent communities versus those communities that are more marginalized. And I know for years, folks have been trying to throw money at the problem and figure out what it is. And in many cases, I think that schools don't have sufficient capacity, meaning like the human capacity, the resources, the materials. And I see like AI as being a potential way to bridge some of this gap, specifically thinking about, I'm fascinated with and want to learn more about agentic AI. Like I really am just very, very fascinated by it. But I'm just thinking about all of the tools now that we have that can truly differentiate, and they can meet children where they are, understand like where are you, diagnose where they are, and a path to help them move forward. So every individual child in a classroom could actually have an individualized path to help them move where they are. Like there's someone I didn't shout out earlier, with Sean Clam from Playground IEP. Like, I appreciate that technology really thinking about how it is we meet students with special needs and how we develop a system that helps the school be able to support all of those kids. But in my opinion, every single child has special needs because every single child should have a differentiated learning plan. And it's very challenging for most teachers to do that. And so the more I see tech use in classrooms where teachers are able to either replicate themselves, meaning like they're able to kind of have that lesson in small groups, or they're able to help differentiate, or they're able to truly help meet students where they are, that's something that makes me really hopeful, because it's something that's going to ultimately bridge the gap that's been really preventing a number of students from achieving at their highest capacity.
Tia, I'm going to ask you a quick question on that, because we did just talk about the fact that a lot of kind of the next generation of teacher are hesitant to actually lean and use these tools. We're seeing that a lot too. And I'm not sure if it's a product of when AI first came out a few years ago, it was just drilled into early university students and high school kids that it's cheating, it's bad, it's wrong. And we're seeing that attitude actually with this demographic specifically really be negative towards AI adoption, because that was their initial experience with it. How do we get from that place where they're hesitant and they feel that way about it to a place where they're embedding it and using it to actually move student success forward. Any ideas?
I think we have to take the same approach that we've taken over time and just one, understand that this is a natural course of history. I'm sure when the calculator was first invented, people probably thought it was cheating or spell check or all of these different solutions that we use now. Using the computer to research, like, no, you're not going to the library and using the Dewey Decimal System and looking at the book. Like, there are all of these ways that we've had to advance in how we think about technology as it relates to education. I think this is just another one of those things. And I think one, we need to be patient. Two, I think the more we can integrate this into schools, I have not seen holistically school systems and school buildings really integrating the use of AI and only a marginal use of technology, you know, very basic, like typing, basic research, not really leveraging technology and tech solutions for the support of learning in ways that truly can revolutionize it. And so I think that the way to go is one, continue to bring it to districts and principals so that way they understand how they can integrate it, provide actual funding and professional development. So that way, like, it's great to tell this principal, you could do this or you should do that. But if they actually don't have the funding behind it or the training to properly implement it, it's not going to work. And so I think that those are two things. I think the more we can normalize it, the more we will allow it to actually be like just a natural part of the fabric of a school. And I also think that we have to be real about the concerns. Like, we can't shy away from them. We need to be real and talk about, you know, water in Mississippi and what's happening in the community, or talk about the chips and what's happening in the Congo. Like, part of what I think this generation wants is they want to be real. They want to know that we're thinking about it. And not, yes, we're thinking about it. And also while we're doing it, we're building the sort of ethical use that can allow our students to actually now be creators and not just consumers of it, that can allow them to be some part of the solution. Like, if you don't know as a teacher, if you don't know as a student what the challenges are, and if you're not, you know, really adept with navigating AI, then how can you ever be part of the solution? And so I think the more we normalize it, the closer we'll get. And I think it starts with us, like, being okay with the fact that some people are reticent and actually meeting people where they are.
Absolutely. Elle, you know, tough act to follow there, but good luck. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would echo a lot of what Tia said, but I would say that if leaders aren't using the tools, it's very hard to get your teachers and your students comfortable with it, right? So, and that starts, you know, things like this start at the top. Like, if I as a leader am scared of AI, and I was, you know, have like some concerns, if I'm not leveraging agentic AI as it gets to like my scheduling, my tasks, and like identifying how I should be used, you know, spreading out my time. And if I'm doing that, and then not getting to the things that are most important, like spending time with teachers and leaders, then ultimately I can't help trickle those behaviors down that help to reduce the barriers that people feel. Because those emotional barriers, that fear piece, is going to be the roadblock for like this whole generation of teachers who are hesitant. So if you can say, well, actually, I'm using it. This is the tool that I use. This is how I use it. This is how I want you to use it to identify like the students that, you know, need the most help, you know, need your most help. So upload your data. And like, if it comes from a leader, if it comes from your AP, then it helps to reduce some of those barriers, and people can see it not as cheating, but as a way to like make you more efficient, to give you more time with kids. Or like, that's like how these tools are supposed to work. That's the calculators. I was just having a conversation this weekend with people about AI, and calculators came up, graphing calculators, right? And it's like, why would you do it by hand? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. We can get to so much more math. You can get to so much deeper learning if I believe you have the basics, and then, you know, we can like skip that part. So I know you know your multiplication, like let the calculator do that part, and like, let's get into deeper understanding. So I think part of it is about raising the bar for the conversation. Like, we're not talking about whether or not it's good or bad. Like, it, like anything, has its pluses and minuses. And like, what is it going to help us do that we couldn't do otherwise? How does it make me more efficient? Like, how does it make me, how does it speed up the research that I need to do? So like, we're not going to go to the library and Dewey Decimal System. Wikipedia is not right to be trusted. How can AI help direct us to the article, to the website that's going to get us exactly what we need, that's reputable, right? So that we can get into the act of learning. We can get into the act of being with kids. We don't have to, you know, spend so much time on like your grammar. Like, we can, use AI to help us with it. Let's talk about the content. Like, let's make sure that you're being nuanced and thoughtful, right? Like, these are the things that we should be thinking about AI helping us do as educators, so that kids are not afraid of it and then not using it to cheat, but using it to spend time on the higher order thinking, on the things that that are more challenging to solve the problems of the world. And so I think it starts at the top. And as a leader, I'm not doing it, then I'm not modeling the way that we should approach any kind of change that exists within a system, right? Like, I need to help usher people in and engage in some really thoughtful change management about behaviors and habits so that people can get to do better work and in this way, perhaps do it faster. And I would also like kind of echo to your point around like the impact of AI, the water, the environment. Like, I think, you know, this generation is thoughtful about all of those things and doesn't want us to skip over the impacts. And so it is okay to be honest about like, yes, like that is, you know, that is part of the consequence of like this new technology. Maybe that'll get better, but that may not be a reason to dismiss it in and of itself. And so we can hold both things at the same time. We can hold the challenging ways that it impacts the larger world, and we can embrace what it could do for us on an individual level and hopefully move us forward again, so we can do great work with kids and close, like, I know, I mean, there's so many societal ills that we're trying to address in the close. And so is it worth the delayed progress that we can make? Is our fear worth that? Is the incorporation of a new tool worth that? And we need to, you know, where it's appropriate, we need to grapple that and move forward so we can make lives better and different. And AI is a tool that can be a resource to that.
Dale, what that just sparked for me is a question that I kind of asked myself, but now that I think I want to ask my teachers and educators and folks who are sort of AI resistant, and it's about fear. And the question is your fear of AI stronger than your love for your students? I am not passionate about AI. I am passionate about fostering a world where my students can thrive. I'm passionate about education. I'm passionate about creating sort of like a more just, equitable education system. And I can't let my fear of AI, it is not stronger than my love for my students. And so that is what drives me to embrace this, even though, you know, naturally it would not have been a direction. I mean, I saw iRobot and all of the movies and things, like, you know, I was kind of one of those, like, I don't know. And I also was like, is it cheating? You know, I've been in a doctoral program and I'm like, can I use AI at all? And so I've had to wrestle with my own challenges. And so I think being real with people that, like, you can actually have concerns and still drive this work forward for kids.
I think there's a TED Talk there, Tia.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a joint TED Talk. I said the fear piece. But I I do think, though, Tia, like, I love the idea of tapping into like your passion for kids. But as you know, for me, I my love is like growing adults and adult development and growing like the next generation of leaders. And I need to love that as much, right? Like, I need to love that more than my fear. And I need to love them enough to be like, okay, I'm going to show you how to do it so like you can get over your fear so you can be a better leader faster. I think that was, you know, one of the things that drew me to so much of my like secondary career work and even like legit leader is being like, I wish I had been a better principal. Like, I just wish I had been better. I wish I had been less exhausted all the time. Like, I wish I had been less intimidated for difficult conversations that I was going to have. I wish I had been more prepared, you know, for my day. I wish, you know, there were so many moments of not wanting to ask questions and ask for help. And AI can help you do that. Like, you know, it would have been great if when I was struggling with, you know, an agenda for like a tough conversation with an AP or someone, that I could have gone to a tool and be like, how do I start this conversation? Or here's what I want to say. And here, help me soften it. Help me shorten it. Help me, you know, those things took up a lot of like emotional energy and time for me. And I was a principal for 6 years, but maybe I could have been a principal for 10 or more if I just had some tools to help lighten my load. Right. And so I think it does a disservice to like the leader development piece, the teacher development piece, and to kids if we reject the tools that can help us spend more time with people in a better and more efficient way. And I really do believe that my experience as like a school leader would have been different if I had had some tools to help me. And and had less shame about the things that confused me or challenged me that I thought no one else had challenges with. Even though everyone did, I didn't know that, but it would have created space for me that I think would have been meaningful.
Yeah. Hey, we rarely get someone like Tia. You know, you're leading, you know, the work of TFA in the largest school district and the largest city in the United States. So some of the things you said, I just wanted to highlight. One of the things I love doing is when we get a chance to either work at the state level or with districts or with regions, we interview students and we tell them, and we work with the schools and we say, we're just going to have an open forum about AI. What do you want adults in your lives to know about how you're using AI? And then what I love doing when I get a chance to do a keynote is I just mirror back what they said and I pull exact quotes that I think will resonate with the audience. So just last week, we got to speak to an entire district, all of the PD day, and like, we got to tell them, here's exactly what your students want you to know in this room. Like, one is the fact that like AI can't replace your human relationships. Like, they know, like, AI can help us learn. It doesn't care about us. And I love being able to show that. Like, also, like, it helps you learn the way my brain works. It helps me learn the way I want. So, Tia, you know, I just wanted to share something. I always tell people, like, if I could have been a principal right now, here's what I would love to do with my kids or if I was a teacher. Tell your students, you know, use your AI scale 1 to 5 or 0 to 5 and be like, guys, tonight, level 5 AI. Tomorrow, we have the exact same AP Lit essay that you're going to always write. You've done every year. Tonight, level 5. I want you to go nuts. Use any AI tool you want. Here's the question. I want you to be ready for tomorrow's test. And then in the morning before the class, like the first 10 minutes, let's do level 2 AI. Anything you synthesize that fits on like one piece of paper, you can review that. And then it's level 0 during the actual essay. Then afterwards, like, be like, okay, so you all cheated last night, right? What did you use? And one kid's like, oh, I made a podcast out of my notes. Oh, I turned it into a short video. No, I went to this tool. And kids are like, wait, where'd you find that? That's free. How'd you do that? And all of a sudden, like, you just learned how your kids learn. And you think that they're, you know, you're empowering them to actually explain their learning styles, which we all do. And to highlight something you all said about cheating, I was really fortunate recently. I got to work with Carolyn Quintana, who's former deputy chancellor in New York City. And we built this amazing presentation for 90 leaders from across the country as part of ISTE Generation AI. And a lot of it comes down to AI literacy and integrity. And every time I would make something with AI, she would go, Brett, are you cheating? I'm like, I don't think so. She's like, why not? I'm like, because I just want this to be really good for my audience. She's like, right. So like, teachers aren't cheating when they're doing it. If they're using it authentically to push the rigor and the discourse and make it more engaging. And then we said, well, what if students felt the same way? What they're doing matters. And so, Tia, something you said that I really want to push, and you know, again, you're in a seat of change, and I'm so envious of that for you, and I'm so proud of you that you're in that seat, is you get to say, imagine like when we talk to people about, well, students shouldn't use this technology for this skill. So I'm always like, my son's in third grade. He needs to learn the mental processes and writing out and explaining his answers in math. Once he's quote-unquote mastered that, then ask someone, what exact thing? What's your why? Why are you giving them this task? And is it something that AI can make even better? Like, now, what data analysis could they use with AI once you know they know the computational skills? But it forces people to ultimately go back to, why are you choosing this activity first? What's the skill you're assessing? And then could AI make this a more enriching, rigorous, engaging experience for students, like a more edge of your seat learning experience? So I just wanted to highlight, like, that's the question that hopefully educators are thinking. Why would I do it this way versus the other way? And there's no right or wrong answer. But if you can't understand, like, why you're even asking people, students, to do it, well, that goes back to really good pedagogical skills, and AI can just enhance that.
I mean, I 100% agree with you, Brett. And I'm excited that you're doing that. That's so important work. And, you know, we have to figure out how to get you out into some more districts. We only place new teachers in New York City, but we are a statewide region. And so I was up last week in Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, meeting with the districts, meeting with educators there. We're going to be hosting an educator summit in the spring in Rochester. And so we have to figure out how to get these conversations going there. But I 100% agree with you in terms of really pushing the rigor, not only for educators, but the rigor for students. And how do we leverage this as a tool to push the rigor? Also, how do we teach students? So I love the sort of level 5, level 3, level 0 AI use, because one, we're normalizing it. We're helping them to understand. It's similar to anything else we would teach students in terms of, for example, when I was a classroom teacher and I taught language arts and writing, I would help my students understand when, how to code switch. And so when it was okay, when they needed to speak in standard American vernacular English, I would say, "All right, this conversation's in save." Or when they could speak the way that they would speak with their friends, and I would help them understand it, like you differentiate. And it's an important skill to know. So if you want it right now, this conversation needs to be this way. However, when you are meeting with, you know, when you're in an interview, how are you going to talk? So it's a similar skill. And I think that if we are able to differentiate that and help teachers to understand. So for example, AI could be used as a feedback partner. It could be used as a tool when a student's writing. It could be used as a way to suggest prompts or used as a way to help create outlines or a way to think about next steps. And the teacher could actually help the student understand how to leverage it for those reasons, right? So if we don't want them using it in ways that we feel are unproductive to them, let's actually help them understand the meta process. Let's trust our kids. Our students are smart. They're smart. Our kids know they have their own agency. And if we are able to tap into that and say, we respect you, let's help you understand it, then they actually become the consumer. They become the creators we want as opposed to just consumers. And then as consumers, they're more responsible consumers. So I think we do a disservice. And I partially think it's a lack of imagination. I think it's a lack of imagination on the part of educators. And part of it, I think, is a lack of exposure to even know, like, I don't even think that most people know what they don't know. So like, I don't even think most people know how it could be useful. I don't think most people understand like what are simple ways they might be able to incorporate it in the classroom. And I think that many people are waiting for some big professional development and a big, you know, a big shift on like the education spectrum. And I don't know that that's coming yet. I think the teacher prep programs are far, I think they're bigger fish to fry before they get to the AI challenges. I think the teacher prep programs are a little bit outdated. And so I think they're slightly bigger fish to fry. And so until then, what can we do to make it seem like this is just something that we use as an everyday part of our work? And let's talk about how we use it. So I appreciate that work that you're doing and can't wait to see more of it.
Yeah. One thing that you just said, because again, you're at this intersection, right? You're preparing the next generation for the next generation, the age of AI in education. And one thing, getting to speak to some teachers after this keynote, we did like an AMA and Ask Me Anything. And what was great is obviously there's so much wisdom in that room, but there's not always a time for like people to get to share those best practices and tips. But what we kept reflecting on was like, when I want to see a teacher really like whole class instruction is their metacognition, right? So if you're a history teacher, it's like, so when I said this is my thesis statement, it made me think, okay, what evidence? What's the best argument? Okay, this is a fact here. There's a fact. And obviously that's transferable to any skills. And I said, you all are excellent at that. So now imagine if you're now using an AI tool and you're like, so last night's homework, I decided this is level 2 AI use because I want you to use AI to find these great facts. Then I need you to take those facts and decide what's the most important fact to actually write after your thesis. And then showing them like, right, I use AI all the time. But then when it's time to take an idea, I need to take those ideas and do that. And we said, you're all doing that right now, teaching each other how you're using AI. If you started doing that when you showed students that, and that's where they brought up, oh, like as Rebecca brought up earlier, oh, that's a type of AI literacy. How are you engaging and then creating with AI are different skill sets that we want our students to do. And that's like the one time I want teachers to talk. Explain how you came up with that. You're the quote unquote expert in the room on subjects, then turn it over to them. But it's here. Like they know that. So I guess, sorry, that was a long-winded way of saying, always validate that educators are great educators. This is just a new thing to educate students on, but like, don't forget how you're a great teacher. This is just a new thing you're teaching students that you're going to pick up pretty quick. It just don't lose sight of how good you are at explaining things, in other fields. Just translate it to this now. And with that, we have our two favorite questions. Rebecca, do you want to frame for everyone how we flip the script in the middle of our show?
Yeah, it's basically just like a giant Uno reverse where suddenly we turn the show over to you and we're going to make you the hosts for a second so that you can ask us anything you want, a question for Brett and or I. If you have anything that would be within the sphere of what we do or what we've seen, now is your moment.
I'm curious from the work that you all are doing, the perspective that you have, What are your fears? Like, what are you, what keeps you up at night as you think about AI adoption, particularly in schools? I think, yeah, I'm curious about like what concerns you in the field right now.
This is what I read Rebecca's LinkedIn and just conversations, because no one scares me more because she knows more than Rebecca. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is my area of expertise. And I get asked this question a lot, and there's a lot that really freaks me out. There's like the big existential questions, I guess. Like, people are like, oh, aren't you worried robots are going to take over the world? And for me, it's more questions of power. Who has the power? Who's behind the robots? Who's deciding whose voices matter and whose voices don't matter? And who has like those questions of power on an existential level scaring me the most. I think what I've been diving into a lot recently, just in preparation for a state summit that I'm speaking at, is I did a deep dive this last week into AI, the deepfake nudes that kids are making, like where you can just like use an app to. And so I did a deep dive and I just wrote about it today. And I went to see how many apps I could find and what they were and how easy they were to access as if I was a kid. And it was really, it was really unsettling. I found like 85 in less than an hour, and they were heavily promoted specifically to teenagers through Instagram and Instagram stories that were targeting their feeds. There's a lot happening in Discord and links that are being shared. They're available in the App Store, kind of like LibGen, where like the sites just like move all the time, but people can always find them. And I think that was really upsetting to me. So on a broader scale, the impact on kids, teenagers, some of the downstream negative effects of this technology, you know, the cognitive offloading, we talk about what happens if kids, these COVID kids who kind of were forced to coast for a while, now don't get this and now are entering real world profession. Just the impact downstream of what this means for kids and relationships, how they relate to people, the consequences for their actions of using these apps. And it all really scopes back out to that question of power. Why are people in positions of power allowing these apps to exist? Why are we not doing more to protect kids? And why is this not a priority? So those in a nutshell, but Brett knows I could go all day every day, but that's kind of mine as of today. Brett, what about you?
You know, I think Tia was mentioning like agentic AI. So yesterday was the first time I clicked the button on like ChatGPT agent mode, like full access. And it was the scariest thing ever. It was like, I guess when someone probably has a self-driving car for the first time and they're like, am I really just going to like let this car drive itself? Like, this feels very scary. And then I'm sure very soon after you like take that for granted. But that was my moment yesterday for the first time doing that. Today I walked from, you know, where Tia's office is at in Lower Manhattan to the Apple Store. And like, I passed, you know, the World Trade Center and I read a lot about memorials and I passed the museum, which I've been to. And sometimes AI reminds me I actually had a moment where I was watching people take pictures and I'm like, somehow this is so surreal and normal that like that day you can remember like it being a beautiful day and then like a very bad thing happened that you would have never expected. And I sometimes feel that about AI, like it's helping me do the normal day-to-day things very well and I enjoy it. And yet like, is there like this next thing that I'm not ready for that like will just hit us like a ton of bricks and we're like, oh. So I have like that feeling that like the bottom could fall out and I wouldn't even be ready for it, slash like I should know better, but I don't. And I sometimes just have that feeling creep into like very like peaceful, serene moments that I obviously never would have thought of before. So that's probably the thing that keeps me up most, is like, I know where this could go and I read all that and yet still I'm like, like this is fun. I just, you know, it helped me write an email in a way I can't believe it actually can do. That's such a different thing. So that's probably like, am I taking the novelty for granted and like not really thinking about 10 years from now what this could mean if it goes a certain direction? Hard-hitting questions. Now I see why you were nervous, Elle, at the beginning of this podcast. Y'all bring it.
I'm going to actually bring the temperature down a little bit and not talk about the doom and gloom. And I am very curious about, from all that you've seen, what is your opinion about the industry in which you feel AI is most underutilized? And what could it mean if they were to lean into it more? What could it mean for that industry? What could it mean for humanity if they were to lean into it more?
I think like as a, like an academic and as a researcher, I see and I tell people all the time, like using AI to write stuff for you is like the least interesting way to use it. if people use it like as a PhD level Socratic dialogue partner to push back and gap check and spot where their blind spots are and what they're not seeing, and use it as a tool to help identify their own hidden bias or their own hidden assumptions, I think that is so valuable. Like, I wish everybody would take anything that they write or think or making a decision on and use AI in a way that says, I realize, like, I'm sitting from a place where this is my view. Tell me all the things I'm not seeing or that I'm missing from a place of privilege or isolation, or that I might not be considering, and help me sit in that discomfort and identify what I'm missing. I think if everybody used it in that way, we would develop more empathy as a society and we would make better decisions. That's my answer.
The way that I use AI that I wish more people utilized it for is the following. And I want to first preface, like, everything I'm about to say needs to be followed with, like, privacy, consent. But I always tell people, the second I'm talking to someone where it goes from, like, personal to professional when it comes to, like, improving education, I always say, if you don't mind, could I record this? Like, I want to capture your wisdom. I'm never going to hear someone say it exactly the way you are. And what I find so interesting is we hold town halls, listening sessions, all these things, and we still rely on, like, one person to take notes, which is not even biased. It's just, like, you only can take so many notes. And also then that person's not present. You can't be an amazing note taker and a present participant. So one thing I do constantly is I always say, what's the safest, most ethical way for you to capture the wisdom in this room? And especially when it comes to AI, when I met with those students, we met with 10 students for 40 minutes, right? So not earth-shattering amount, but they kept saying, could you bring teachers to this next time? Could you bring my parents to this? Like, everyone's talking about AI, and yet we're not ever taking, like, ask everyone the same questions, compile it and say, actually, we just talked to 500 people in your community. Here's what you actually want. And I've done that at the state level where we traveled across Ohio and I just kept building it and showing them, like, here's what you want. The educators across Ohio, red, blue, rural, urban, suburban, this is what you want. And I'm just mirroring back your words. And it shocks me still that, like, that's the key thing that I could have never done as a principal or a leader. And, like, you can bring your community together and then you can actually show them, this is how I know this is relevant. And I do that all the time with communities, and I'm still constantly mesmerized by, like, how powerful it is and how I wish I could make more people recognize, like, that is the superpower that I wish I had had as a leader to bring people together that only AI so far I've seen been able to do so.
That's so powerful. That is so powerful. Imagine if you were able to take that conversation and conversation with students, conversation with teachers, and those be the ones who are informing the next engineer who's designing the next AI tool, imagine that. Or Rebecca, if this sort of like PhD Socratic sort of seminar-ish push agent, AI agent was available in every single politician, CEO, organization president, they actually had to go through that filter before they made decisions, before they made legislation, before they made a decision about the company. Like, imagine how that would totally shift society. So I think those were both very, very powerful examples of ways that AI could truly help to push us all forward.
Yeah, I'd love to hear actually your guys' answers.
Ooh, the flip, the reverse Uno reverse, the Uno reverse Uno reverse.
The reason why I'm in this work in the way that I am is because I do believe it is under AI is underutilized in education and academia in general. And I agree that drafting an essay, drafting an email, like those are useful, but probably some of the least creative ways. And I think that in academia and education, one other way that I think AI is underutilized, and I'm really interested, this is why I'm more interested in learning more about agentic AI, really learning more about how to leverage it. I think when I think about nonprofits, community-based organizations, NGOs around the globe, I think that there are a number of systems and processes that we could standardize that agentic AI could actually help us support. And I don't think we're leveraging them in the ways that we could. And so when I think about some of the systems for some of the everyday things that we put in place, I wonder how we might be able to leverage AI better to make us more efficient. You know, many of us who are running nonprofits are constantly battling the resource constraints. having enough people, raising enough money, and being able to move the work in ways to drive impact. But what if we were able to bring AI agents in to take care of some of the back office stuff or to think about some of the baseline level tasks that we have team members performing? That would free up the human capital to interact with the public, to interact with donors, to actually be present. And I don't think we've even scratched the surface of how we could use AI to improve efficiencies in the nonprofit sector. And I think about not only the nonprofit sector here, again, I'm thinking about NGOs globally, where there may be even greater resource constraints, and how if we're able to think about the use cases and build the tools that could help support it, I think it could really, really help the communities in different ways, because it would allow these organizations to be able to focus on the most important thing, which is whatever way it is they're trying to drive impact.
I was thinking something similar to Tia when I thought about wraparound services and how do you identify community needs? Because I feel like as an educator, I was always tasked with like, oh, what do we do outside of school? Like you spend a lot of time in school, but like you spend the majority of your life actually like not in this like bubble that we can create. So I'm curious, I don't know what this would look like, but I would love to think about like city planning and like other ways in which we think about the entire set of services that like people need to thrive and how AI can help them plan for that, help you like find the money to like have access, greater access to people to solve the challenges that people are not always, you know, really strategically thinking about that, or and like elder care. Like there's something to like, as you age, and how are we helping folks who are, you know, in the later years using AI to address some of the concerns that they have, what they're like living with, whether that's loneliness, whether it's like access to resources and how they like, how you go out making sure that they can get out of the house, get to what they need. There's so much more beyond, outside of the realm of education that concerns me, and that I always kind of wished I could get involved with, and it wasn't quite like my path, but it makes me curious about how AI could help to solve some of those larger issues that are like more systemic. And again, that I think people like to tend to ignore, right? Schools go through periods of like real sexiness, and people are like, oh, I want to volunteer at school, give to schools, charter schools, private schools, vouchers, like it gets a lot of airtime from, you know, every couple of years. But there are some areas of the human experience that don't get a lot of attention. And it makes me wonder about how AI could be helpful to like raise that onto people's radars in ways that then you kind of can't skirt around. But I'm not sure what that would look like. But that's, I think there's the potential there to help it be a thought partner as people are thinking about things that that communities need that are not on their radar or have been dismissed as something that is just how this group of people have to live.
First of all, thank you. Those are incredibly insightful answers. And something I just heard today, someone say like AI is the thing that helps you solve the thing, right? The problems existed pre-AI. AI can be a solution to some of those things you talked about, like elder care, community-based problems outside of the schools and communities we served and serve. I'm going to model our last question, which is Ocean Elevens, right? We're building our crack squad, our dream team that's going to help solve some of these societal and educational issues we've all been grappling with forever. Elle, you just mentioned like funding. So someone I'm always going to shout out, Jeremy Bhatia at Eddy, works with nonprofits and districts. He's doing tremendous work in helping make sure every dollar gets maximized for every student that they deserve in those communities. And they do a great job of helping nonprofits and educational districts think through that. But I'd love to hear from both of you as we close out in our final question. Who are those final people you want to make sure everyone knows about that play that are near and dear to your hearts, that are doing the incredible work that you want to be working alongside of to solve some of these challenges?
I really want to highlight Sean Clam and Playground IEP. Students with special needs are some of our most marginalized students in the education system. And they quite often go without getting sufficient services. And I'm worried about their future, given the shift that we're going in the sort of federal government as it relates to education and some of the protections that are being pulled back. I don't know how they're going to fare. If schools and districts are able to fortify their own systems, then they can protect those students themselves and not have to worry about an outside entity doing that for them. So I think Playground IEP offers a cool opportunity to truly like solve some of those back end challenges, scheduling meetings, communicating across the whole community about what the needs are, keeping an accurate account of the particular services, ensuring that, you know, the servicing of that student happens at a regular basis, that we're updating the account, that we're looking at when it needs to, when we need to have the next meeting to ensure that the services that they're getting are actually still aligned with their needs. Playground IEP, I think, is a wonderful tool to help schools do that. And so I want to shout out Sean. He would be on my team if I were building a superpower, you know, a super squad for education.
This one, so I'm going to say Sharif Omeke, who is the CEO of the Center for Black Educator Development. And I admittedly, like, I'm not sure what they're doing with AI, but when I think about someone who I want to be working alongside to, like, really make sure that AI usage is being accelerated and taken advantage of, I think about the work that he's doing and making sure that there are Black teachers, specifically Black male educators in the classroom. And it, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, all the research about the progress that students can make when you have someone, you know, who looks like you in particular for our Black male students, but also because of AI, and this probably alludes to someone else that I should be thinking about, but because of AI, jobs are changing, right? Like the entry-level jobs, and there's going to be so much, a much greater need for men to leave, young men to like leave fields and like finance and all that kind of stuff, because those entry-level jobs are going away. And we need men in particular, young, to be educators, to want to be teachers, to want to be nurses, to like get into the fields that I think are traditionally fields that we encourage young women to go into. And so I just think about like, how can we be using AI to build up this group of young men who like want to be educators, who are really accelerating their school gap, I mean, their skills, so that they're great teachers that help to fill, like, address the next generation's needs, but then also thinks about like, this as a career path that is long-term and sustainable in a way that it wasn't, you know, for my peer group when I was going into the classroom. So that's one person that I would have on my super team.
Quick one, and then I will throw it back to you, Elle. So be ready, because I'm going to toss it back very quickly to you. Lori Beer. Lori Beer is the co-chair of my board at Teach for America New York. She's the chief information officer at JPMorgan Chase. And I think about a powerhouse like JPMorgan Chase, the person who's leading, you know, the tech for such a powerhouse, global powerhouse. What it could mean to have somebody like that who's so focused on education, so committed to equity, so committed to the economic mobility of communities and leading in this space, what that could mean for setting a trend for other companies, setting a trend for the ways that companies and industry can interact with communities. So I want to shout her out for the work that she's doing and just for the powerful example that, you know, that this could be for other communities and other companies.
I'm trying to look it up because I'm nervous now, I'm blanking, but the CEO of Robinhood, I just went to a conference and he spoke, and now I can't remember his name because I feel nervous. And so I'm like, I'm going to, you got it, Tia, do you?
Is it Richard, I'm not going to, Bury? Would that be the person you're referring to?
Yes. Okay. So I would want someone on the team who, on my team, who is thinking about so many other challenges like that face young people and is invested in different communities, and then thinking about how we could be using AI and within those organizations that they're already funding to like make their work better, and to and like, you know, to deepen the impact and widen and broaden like the lives that get touched, and so I think I'd want to have him on my team to like really be pushing the fundraising piece and pushing like, these are the organizations that might be off of, that might not be on your radar, but that we should be investing in because they're touching more lives than what I can see in front of me right now. So that would be, they would both be on my team.
So that just made me think about how I would want my team to be well-rounded, and similar to the sort of Sharif Omeke option, Eldridge. I'm thinking about a good friend of mine, Dr. Ruby Ababio Fernandez. I don't know if you know her, Ruby. She was a school teacher. She was a principal. She coached principals. She was chief strategy officer for the Department of Education, leading the equity work across NYC DOE. She was with Courageous Conversations, the organization that really pushes the sort of equity work. And now she's with McGraw-Hill. So really thinking about textbooks and think about the powerhouse of McGraw-Hill across the globe. And as we're thinking about the next wave of textbooks is really thinking about tech. Like, people are not buying textbooks in the same way. And so tech is the new wave of that. And so having somebody there who can really influence this sort of tech direction of a company that's really thinking about education, I think could really help to ensure that some of the building is happening in the equitable ways that we've been talking about. Some of the building is really including the humanity of the people that we serve. And some of the building of this work truly reflects, I think, the highest possibility of the dream that we have for our kids and for our futures. So I would want somebody like that on the team as well.
That is a powerhouse list. I can't wait to look up all of these people that you've talked about. This is actually my favorite part of the podcast for that exact reason. I discover new, brilliant people that I can learn from. So thank you for sharing those. And thank you for allowing me to learn from both of you over the last hour that we've spent together. We are grateful to have you here. And I know Brett feels the exact same way.
Yeah, so I want to say thank you. This is our first time having two folks join us for the AMP211 podcast. And I think it really, you know, doubled the outcomes. This was so incredible. I learned so much. I'm always so grateful and honored to have folks like you join us and share their wisdom. And we are so excited, and I can't wait for this to come out and people to listen and learn from you all just like we did. And as you said, Tia, there's so much great work to be done. I hope that all of us continue to do this work together alongside those Ocean 11 folks, alongside those folks we're talking good behind their backs on. And I just want to thank you both so much again for joining us, and to our audience out there, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to joining you next time on the AMP211 podcast. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks again.